Welcome to the Music Therapy Roundtable Podcast. We are your hosts, Rachel Rambach,
Michelle Erford,
Matt Logan,
and Kimberly Senna Moore.
We are four board-certified music therapists with a mission to empower you to take charge of your personal and professional growth. Join us each month as we talk shop and share stories, tips, and ideas about music therapy. Thanks for stopping by.
I had a mentor once tell me that one aspect of the music therapy profession she liked most was its diversity. If she ever felt stagnant working in a particular setting or with a particular clinical group, all she would have to do is find a new setting or population, and presto, she would be faced with a set of challenges to spark her intellectual and creative growth. A board-certified music therapist can work across developmental domains, ages, and settings. This diversity is one of the unique features of our field. It also makes it very hard to teach everything during the education and clinical training portion of a music therapist's career. In fact, it's very common for a music therapist to work in settings and with populations that are unfamiliar and require some preliminary study and prep work. So what's one to do? In this 56th episode of the Music Therapy Roundtable Podcast, we discuss what it means to begin working with a new clinical population and preparatory strategies to implement before that first session. So I'm pretty sure that all of us have experience working with new populations as a professional. So that seems like a kind of a good place to start. What have been our experiences in working in a new setting or with a new clinical population?
Well, I can start with this. From the beginning, for the most part, I've worked with two main populations, and those have been children with developmental disabilities and early childhood. So I've been super comfortable with those two populations from day one. But just recently, as I was listening to you introduce this topic, Kimberly, I was thinking I'm kind of in that same position as your professor who was saying, you know, that new set of challenges kind of sparked that intellectual and creative growth. And that's where I was this past fall when I decided to go forward with the NICU music therapy training. I was kind of feeling like, okay, I've been working with these two same populations forever, it seems like. And as much as I love it, I want to try something new, and I want to be able to use those, different sides of my creativity and access a brand new set of skills. So I haven't actually worked with that population yet, aside from the training, but I'm hoping to in the near future. And so I'm really interested to kind of gather some advice from you as we talk about those new populations and jumping in to working with them.
Absolutely. And you have a pretty big step with that coming up, don't you?
I do, yes. One thing that I've learned about working with the hospital, or at least making contact, is that you really do have to have patience and persistence. And the last couple of months, I've been very persistent and actually did manage to get a meeting set up. So by the time this podcast airs, I will have already had the meeting. So hopefully I can give an update next month, but I do have a meeting tomorrow with the NICU manager at my local hospital, and it's a pretty big NICU, so I think that being able to provide music therapy there would be an amazing experience, and I'm really excited, so cross your fingers for me for tomorrow.
Absolutely. We'll be sending good vibes your way. And
thank you.
I know this isn't the topic we're talking about, but my experience in trying to start a new program at hospitals is exactly like yours. And mm-hmm. It has generally taken me years before.
Oh, goodness. So, okay. Then I feel pretty good about just a couple months.
Feel good about a couple of months. Yes.
Okay. Good to know. Good to know.
Yeah. And good luck in your meeting tomorrow.
Thank you.
So what mm-hmm. about you, Matt and Michelle?
Well, I can think of, going all the way back to internship, just being exposed to new populations, and in rapid succession. My internship included three different populations, really. It was pediatrics first for a rotation, and then actually I started with behavioral health, so behavioral health and pediatrics, and then palliative care. So, and also that included a NICU as well. So it was instant exposure to a lot of different areas, which is great because it taught me what to do in that situation. And then, you know, I haven't stayed at many jobs for much longer than a year or two since then. So I've been, I guess, encountering new populations or revisiting populations. So when I first moved, when I moved to Oakland, I was back in a pediatric setting, which I really hadn't done since my internship. So that's been my experience so far.
So does it get easier, or is it different each time, or?
Yeah, I think it gets easier and it's exciting. It's fun. For me anyway, you just go in and act like you know everything, but
that's kind of my plan. Yeah. I feel like, you know, I may not be an expert in this domain just yet, but I've been through the training and I feel confident. And I, like you said, I'm excited. And yeah. So that's kind of the mindset that I'm going to have. You know, you kind of have to fake it till you make it. And I feel like that's something that I've done throughout my music therapy career. So that's kind of the plan.
And that whole, that fake it till you make it, I'm right there with you. And actually that reminds me of, you know, what for me prompted this topic idea was my very first contract in Colorado at the residential treatment center, working with children with a trauma history. And I had never, not in any of my education or clinical training, worked in that setting. And so the learning curve initially was huge because this was a brand new population, brand new needs. I had not done a whole lot in mental health. But I faked it till I made it. Now building a career on what I learned there.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to know that it works and that it all turns out okay.
It can work and it can turn out okay because you're the music therapy expert.
Exactly.
You know, and the kind of the master, I don't know, manipulator is too strong of a word. That's not really what I mean, but right, of being able to go in and assess what's needed in the moment and be able to musically bring in what's needed.
Right. And I think that's what's so cool about our field is that even though we may not be trained specifically in each different population, we get the skills through our education to go in and do that with new populations and eventually become the expert.
Right. And the other neat thing too is that, you know, there are a lot of music therapists who say work in the aging population or work with young kids, especially those with developmental disabilities. But we also see some of these, I don't know, almost niche populations, kind of untapped populations that are starting to emerge that there may not be a whole lot of research because it's not a large population. Maybe a lot of music therapists don't work there, but it's still there. The work can still be done.
Absolutely.
What are some examples of those?
I remember, you know, when I was going through, I don't know if it was my master's or whatever, but some of the work like on burn units that Christine Neugenbauer, and I think I said her name right, Neugenbauer does. And I think she was one of the first ones to do that. And the other one I'm thinking of is, you know, this area of disorders of consciousness. Or working in like a domestic violence shelter. So there are some of these, you know, really small niche areas or maybe doing work. Those are the three that come off the top of my head.
Cool. Thanks.
Absolutely. And I'm sure there are more. So how about you, Michelle? Kind of quiet back there. What have been some of your experiences working with new populations as a professional?
My personal experience with working in new profession populations, when that happened to me, it was always out of necessity. I never made the decision to switch populations. It was always because we moved somewhere and I had to get a job. And the opportunity at the new place that I had moved to was in a different population. So the biggest example that I can think of is my first job. I was working in a residential facility with adults diagnosed with delays. And I was there for 2 years and liked it. And then I moved to Florida, and I got the opportunity to work in a hospital, and which was completely different. And even I had zero experience doing that. I had a lot of great clinical, you know, practicum experiences from my undergrad, you know, training, but none of them was in a hospital. And I remember being really nervous about hospital work, but, you know, in my interview, I just told the music therapist already there that I would love to be a part of a hospital. I have no idea. I don't have direct experience, but I can learn anything, and I'm really interested, and I can do it. I know I knew I could do it. And that was a big kind of, that was probably a moment where I really put on my brave pants to make it happen.
I like that. So we have fake it till you make it and put on your brave pants. These are our tips for starting to work with a new population. Fake it till you make it and put on your brave pants.
I love it.
And when I started working there, you know, and she trained me how to do it. And I think I got lucky that I was working at a hospital that already had music therapy there. So I had that training opportunity, which from another music therapist, which doesn't happen a lot. Mm-hmm. But they trained me how to do it, which was great for her and great for me because I was doing what she wanted me to do. So I was providing music therapy in that facility the way they wanted it done anyway. And it was good for me because I was learning something new and good for my resume and everything. And just professionally, you know, growing. So it worked out really well. And I found out that I really like the hospital setting. Like, that is my thing. And then when we moved again, the same thing happened where it was only hospice experiences, hospice jobs that were available to me. So I did the same thing. I told them I can learn anything. I'm really interested in this because I was, that was the truth. But I've never worked in this population before, but I can learn anything and I want to do this. And they hired me again. I guess it works, that technique. And I learned a lot, and I really found out that the hospital and the hospice setting is my thing. Like, those are that's my jam. I love those areas way more than the first place I was ever working at with that population. So I think taking that chance to try something new really, like how we all say, is great intellectually, but I don't know, you just kind of learn more about yourself and your interests when you do things like that.
Totally.
Absolutely. So let's say we're going in to start with a new population. What kinds of information do you seek out that helps you the most when in your preparations before you start that first session?
Well, for me, I think it's talking to other music therapists that I do consider to be experts in that field or in that population area. I know that when I was starting to prepare for my meeting tomorrow, I went right to Rich Motes, who facilitated the NICU training, and, you know, asked for her advice and said, you know, what would you do in this situation? And what are some, you know, tips that I can use going into this meeting? Actually talking to people so that I can ask questions and kind of get clarification on things that I might still have questions on.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's like a consult.
Yeah, I think that's a good word for it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It just shows the power of your Rolodex and networking with people, because that's how you had that connection. You didn't call Rich out of the blue. She was your teacher at NICU training. Mm-hmm. So that really goes to show how you have to know people. You don't have to know them, but you have to know, you know, it's helpful.
Well,
and even if it's not like a sit down meeting with her,
helpful.
Where someone would want to, you know, maybe charge a consultation fee, which I think there's nothing wrong with that. But, but even if it's just like, hey, I'm starting this new thing, can you just, any words of advice, and they can tell you a resource or what one thing helped them or something like that.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. See, and I think I take a slightly different approach. I don't necessarily see, I haven't sought out the experts before, but I do two things. One, I do a lot of reading. So I, you know, look up the research. I look through my music therapy resources, et cetera. And then I also talk to the people kind of in the trenches, so to speak. So the people at that facility, and really what I'm trying to seek out is what, you know, what do you need? What do the clients need? So it's talking to people, but I don't know that I've ever really reached out to the experts before. Mm-hmm. That's a good idea. I've just never done it.
Well, and I think you are spot on with knowing the population and knowing where you're coming into. And thinking back, that's something that I did in my first job, and it wasn't a new population necessarily, but it was a new facility. And the first thing I did before I came in and started my program was I just observed, and I sat in the classrooms and I watched the teachers interact with the students, and I sat in on the faculty meetings just so that I knew how things ran and I knew, you know, what some of the issues were, so that I wasn't coming in blindly and, you know, just kind of inserting my own, you know, supposed expertise, but I was really knowledgeable about the students themselves and how things sort of ran in that facility.
Yeah, absolutely. You gotta get in there and kind of learn the ropes and learn how a facility or an organization operates. Mm-hmm. That's so important because that, I mean, their idea of what your role is and is going to be might be different than yours. And that's not necessarily a good thing, not necessarily a bad thing, but at least if you know where they're coming from, you can, you know, maybe start there and then work toward what your own ideas for your role are. And you can start to shift the position if you need to, or maybe you're all on the same page and that's great. Mm-hmm. I think also by going to those meetings and shadowing other professionals, whether they're music therapists or other therapists, you start to you kind of get some allies, you make some connections.
Yes.
And get some friends in the organization who can help you with learning the ropes and help you with getting in to talk to other professionals or other organization leaders. You make some friends, you know?
Yeah, friends are important for music therapists, especially because we're usually kind of the new person and the unknown person. And any place that you walk into is going to have those unwritten rules and those sort of already established kind of ways of doing things. And you don't mm-hmm. want to step on toes. You don't want to necessarily ruffle any feathers, especially as the new person. So I think you're absolutely right. It's really good to make those acquaintances.
Mm-hmm. And let me say, that's not just in a clinical setting either, because I'm experiencing that firsthand in conducting my research. I'm at a brand new site. I'm having to do a lot of learning about how things are run at this daycare and who does what, et cetera. And the greatest allies I've had have been the teachers who have really, they've helped me problem solve. They've really gone above and beyond just in terms of helping me out and being willing to answer questions and helping me with the kiddos. It's been really that skill helps in a lot of different settings, not just when you're starting at a new, you know, with a new clinical site.
One last thing I'd like to add to that is when we talk about the researching, because you do have to definitely read about this. You can't just ask your friends for advice for everything. But I think I know from my experience, of course, I'm going to read what has published and has work and what the best practices are and what works and that sort of thing. But I also have a deadline and I need to know, like, I need those vetted resources. You know, there's not a million. There's going to be a lot of research articles about your population, but is that the article that's going to help you with this specific task? And so that's why I like asking, like, the experts or, you know, your colleagues about what has really helped them in learning this population so that I'm not wasting my time. You know, they don't have to tell me what to do. They just, if they could just point me in a direction, you know, that is...
Yeah.
That's the gold, you know, that's what's at the end of the rainbow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think actually looking outside of the profession sometimes is beneficial too, just to get a general idea of, for example, what NICU treatment looks like. And it might be from a medical perspective, it might be from a nursing perspective, or even a parent's perspective. You could, same thing with special education, same thing with, any number, rehabilitation, neuro rehabilitation. You can kind of get an idea for what treatment looks like in general. And from that, you can get more of an idea of what your role is going to look like.
Absolutely. And I do that all the time. That, mm-hmm. And part of that is I think I first started doing that kind of as a result of my training out at Colorado State, because that was a big part of how they went through both their clinical training and their kind of research steps. Was following the Michael Tout's, Dr. Tout's rational scientific mediating model and transformational design model. That element is in there of knowing what other treatments are out there and mm-hmm. What you know, can apply when working as in a music therapy context. So my other question then, kind of my follow-up, we've talked about reading the research, basically, you know, doing the reading and doing the talking, whether it's to experts or to those in the trenches. But for you personally, what kinds of information help you the most kind of inform your work when working with the client? So I'm thinking, like for me, especially in working with kids, a lot of it is what's happening developmentally, both from a skill set standpoint, as well as from a neurodevelopment standpoint, and from a musical development too. So that sometimes helps me say, you know, what's their diagnosis and stuff like that. Does that make sense? Do you get the question I'm trying to ask?
I don't know what the question is.
So you're talking to these people and you're doing this reading. What kinds of information, what information are you pulling out that helps you when you're forming a treatment plan or when you're about to start the work? So what kinds of questions do you ask, or what, am I making any sense? Maybe it just makes sense in my head.
It does. And I'm thinking the answer is everything, because when you enter a new population, there's so much information. And I just remember, mm-hmm. you know, sitting in this training being so overwhelmed with, oh my goodness, like I need to soak all of this in, because it's just so much information. And yes, I want to know about the diagnostics, and I want to know about the developmental milestones, and I want to know, you know, what are the neurological things happening? What are the things happening when I do this particular type of treatment and as opposed to this type of treatment? So it's really, I think, at the beginning, just kind of being a sponge and reading everything, soaking it all in. One thing that's been helpful for me was, you know, knowing the research behind each different method of treatment. And so if I do this, then what is this doing? How is this affecting the patient? So being able to pinpoint, like, what study backs up this, or what study backs this up? Because I know for music therapy, a lot of times we really have to hone in on the fact that it is evidence-based practice, and people that you're approaching about music therapy, you know, in a new setting are going to want that information. So I think for me, that has been one thing that is really essential to know and to be able to repeat to other people.
You know, Rachel, you're making a great point of something that I always feel is whenever I go into a new population, I sort of go through this like process of, you know, you do the research process, and you do the next step. For me, the next step is I'll start, you know, implementing what I learned. Mm-hmm. And then I go through this, like, confidence shutdown where I'm like, is this right? What am I doing? I don't know. And so, and it's happened in every population. And so that's why it's always been helpful for me to have a mentor or a buddy or a supervisor, like professional supervision, or someone that I can go to consistently to say, this is what happened, this is what I did, then this is what happened, is that normal? Because a lot of the times, especially in the hospice, in the hospital setting where a lot of things that I've been doing, like if you're doing something where it's more about like an emotional regulation thing, but not so observable, or there's just more growing and learning to do. And it's not just kind of, it's a different way of counting success. Mm-hmm. And that sort of thing. I need that person to help guide me with when I have my confidence. Like, I don't know. I just get to this point where I'm like, I don't know. Is this right? Is this how it's supposed to look? I don't know. And so you made me think about that with your comment, Rachel.
And that's, yeah, that's a really good point. So knowing the research and then also having somebody that you can process through, like you said, bounce ideas off of and maybe fine tune your approach or get the validation that yes, what you're doing, it actually is working. Mm-hmm. So have you found that when you're working with a new clinical population, your own treatment style or approach changes?
Yes. You know, just going from, say, a school to a hospital, you're to a pediatric hospital, you're working with the same age kids, but my treatment style has totally changed. You know, working in a school, you might be doing a lot more behavioral stuff. You're working with kids who are, for the most part, healthy, and you're trying to help them succeed in that environment, which is very different from the hospital environment. And you're trying to help kids succeed there too, but it looks a lot different. And the goals might be much more, they might deal more with coping and with emotional expression and providing lots of opportunities for choice and expression, which could look different in a school. So there's just one example where it's changed my approach. It's also, I mean, going from a behavioral health setting to an adult hospital setting, adult medical setting, or a hospice setting, it looks very different. And having the flexibility as a clinician, then, I mean, now that I know the difference, or others who have worked in those different populations know the difference in treatment approaches, I think it makes you a more flexible therapist, and it helps you see the needs of each individual patient, regardless of what setting they're in, and really use music to meet those.
Yeah, and what I'm thinking of for myself, and I'm glad you brought this up, when I started working with the children with the trauma history, you know, I had come from this very strong neuroscience-based training, and now I'm working in this mental health field, and they were at the time more behavioral. And so I, you know, part of me as a contracted music therapist, I needed to meet their needs. I needed to, you know, make the facility happy. But I also had kind of my own background and my own area of expertise that at the time didn't exactly mesh. And I remember I tried fitting, you know, I fit in with their style first, which was more behavior based, and it just wasn't working. You know, mm-hmm. had the stickers and, you know, the behavior modification techniques and things like that. And it just, it wasn't working. Now, I was fortunate that the facility itself was undergoing a change from a more behavior-based model to a neuro-based model. And so I was, you know, they were just about to start that when I joined and started working with the children there. So we got to kind of go on that journey together, because as I was learning about kind of some of the neurological underpinnings of trauma and what happens from a developmental standpoint, both in terms of the underlying, you know, brain development, how it influences that and how you see that behaviorally. They were learning that as well. So we got to kind of learn it together. So it ended mm-hmm. up okay, but it was that initial, it was not easy initially, because it didn't mesh, you know, but yet mm-hmm. I still had to work within their system.
Yeah, I think it will be very interesting to see how my approach changes. And I think that there's, you know, no doubt that it will, just because of the absolute, like, opposite end of the spectrum that my hopefully new clients will be, as opposed to, you know, working with kids that are that have developmental disabilities in early childhood, you know, you're used to getting tons and tons of feedback from them, whether it's, you know, in their actions or in their vocalizations and verbalizations. And you obviously don't get those same kinds of feedback with babies, premature babies especially. So it will be interesting to see how things change for me and how my approach changes.
Yeah, we'll have to do a check-in here in a couple of months.
Yeah, definitely.
Or, you know, a couple months after you start working there.
Right, right.
And also how that, you know, what you learn in that new setting, how does it change what you do within the other work?
Exactly. I think that will be really interesting too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't even know if this is a fair question to ask, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So do you have like a top go-to resource related to this topic? So, you know, what's the first place you would go to if you're starting work with a new population?
Mine is my Rolodex.
Yeah. Okay. So I got to ask Michelle, do you literally have a Rolodex?
I actually have a box.
Do you like really?
I have a box that I use for, what are those things called that we don't use anymore? Note cards.
Business
I have a
cards?
Note card. I have a note card box. You know, like I took me forever to find it. Like I had to like order on Amazon because I couldn't find them in stores. But
are you talking about a box for business cards?
No, I'm talking about, I couldn't find that. I ended up getting, I had a picture, I should share, I have it somewhere, but I put business cards in it, but it's, you know, like a recipe box, like for note cards, a note card box. And I had to like order it and get like the tabs with the alphabet on it, but I put all my business cards in it. And because I have to organize them some way, but it's easier when I go on Facebook, because I always think of the business cards are people that I've actually met face to face because they gave me the cards. So that's how I know I actually like have seen them. But then just through Facebook and other people's blogs and all that online stuff, you learn, you get to know people, and you don't have to be buddies. You don't have to really have emailed them before, but that's another list of folks that you can feel comfortable approaching. I do have a go-to place where I would never ask for help on this. Would you like to know?
I think I have an idea what it is.
I'm nervous.
I would never, and this is me, because I like to have really close connections with people, but I would never ask a large group of people that I've never met before in my life, who I don't know who really is in the group, like a Facebook forum. I would never ask, hey, 2,700 people, I'm just got this job with this new population. How do I do it? I would never do that because I don't think you're going to get quality information that way. I think the best way to go is through your personal networking contacts. But there are some Facebook groups where I would ask that question, one of them being the Music Therapy Pro Forum.
Yeah.
Somehow I knew where that was headed.
Partly because it's an intimate group. There are other groups out there, like, you know, the business owner group. There's that business owner group. There's a hospice and palliative care group. Mm-hmm. I would ask something like that.
Yeah. There's a pediatric music therapist group.
Because to me, it's all about getting the quality information, and you know that, and I just feel more confident that I'm not going to be wasting my time or the other people's time when I am talking to a smaller group and people who I just kind of know where they're coming from and who they are. I don't have to know who they are, but you know who they are. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Yeah, and you can also ask for introductions to other people too.
Yes.
Say, hey, who can introduce me to someone who's currently working in this population.
Anyone else? Matt, how about you? Do you have a top go-to resource?
You know what? I think human resources are really, really valuable. I definitely use that. And then also general books, like introduction, even the introduction to music therapy book, if it's a brand new population, just to get an idea for what are some common goals and common outcomes, and then use the references to find research. that backs all that stuff. So I would say when I'm first starting out, I try to get a broad general idea of what's going on. So I talk to people and I find general books about the topic.
I agree with both of you, Michelle and Matt. And also wanted to add one more, and I think we've kind of touched on this already, but people that are already involved in working with those populations, or even people that work at maybe the facility that you're going to be working at or that you're hoping to work at. I know that I've, worked on making contact with people that do work in the hospital and that have experience in the NICU. I'm actually friends and acquaintances with several of the NICU nurses there. So I've had a chance to kind of speak with them and ask for their input and kind of get their perspective on working with that population. So that's been really helpful too.
Nice. And my first go-to would be my library. So Matt, kind of what you brought up, I would go to my own library of books and kind of pull out anything that might relate and skim and start reading. That would be my first go-to place. It's funny, I haven't done a whole lot of talking with people. Like I wouldn't go to I don't know, maybe it's just my own personal style.
It is.
Sure.
Remember when we did our summit, the Music Therapy Roundtable Summit, when we all met in California?
Well, it was just a couple weeks ago. So
yes. It feels like a long time. I don't know if the listeners really knew about it, but remember we did that, those surveys, what were they called? Those personality
Strength finders.
Yeah, we did the strength finder right. Surveys, which we did a podcast on that with Jennifer Sokira and Emily Bevlacqua a long, long, long time ago. Mm-hmm. But we did those surveys, and it's actually really interesting because we're all kind of agreeing on the same thing of how to approach this, but we have different approaches. And remember, like, I'm obviously very big on talking to people about this, but remember my survey came back with my number one thing being charisma. But Kimberly, that's what right. was your thing? It was bookish.
It was learning, wasn't it?
I think it was learning or something yeah. like that. Yeah. So that just makes total sense. Of course.
Of course. Oh, man.
I'm opposed to books or you're opposed to people. It's just not our go-to thing to do.
That is right. I'm so good. What a beautiful way to tie that in, Michelle. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So to kind of wrap things up here, we will be sharing more specific tips and ideas related to, I don't know, maybe our strengths, but also really to beginning treatment with a new clinical population on our premium website, musictherapypro.com. This pro conversation is only available to our pro community, who also have access to a members-only forum, resource lists, videos, exclusive podcasts, and discounts with select members. CMTE courses are also available to community members at no additional charge. At Music Therapy Pro, we've done the hard work already. Now we're sharing our secrets with you. Join the community at www.musictherapypro.com. So this month's cool resource of the month is actually in part inspired by my Facebook feed right now, which is blowing up with pictures and status updates of some of my music therapy friends and colleagues who are in Vienna, or actually I think KREMS, K-R-E-M-S, at this year's World Congress of Music Therapy. This particular convention brings together music therapists from all over the world, and it takes place in different countries every, I believe it's 3 years. So this year it's in Vienna, and you can follow the hashtag. They have a hashtag if you want to see the latest updates. It's hashtag WCMT for World Congress Music Therapy 2014, WCMT 2014. And we will also include a link to the website URL where you can see some of the presentations and abstracts. And we've spent a lot of time on this podcast talking about some of the experts in the field. Well, this will be a list of some of the most recent presentations and research and books that are happening in music therapy around the world. So this month's cool resource is the World Congress of Music Therapy.
And we also want to give some shout outs to our awesome ProPerk partners. Music Therapy Pro members receive discounts on products and services from Music Therapy eBooks, Music Therapy mailings, Wholesome Harmonies Music Therapy, A Perfect Lullaby, the Music Therapy Research Blog, Boom Totes, Listen and Learn, and the Music Therapy Maven. Thank you for your support.
And we are so excited about a new feature that we will be offering to our Music Therapy Pro members, and that is called the Four Corners. And we named this feature Four Corners because all four of us will be sharing sort of from our expertise corner. And those are the following. Mine is called the Business Savvy Clinician. Michelle's is the Complete Communicator. Kimberly's is From Research to Practice. And Matt's is Musicianship and Gear. So each month, all four of us will be sharing a post from our corner for Music Therapy Pro members.
We'd also like to announce a new mini podcast series that we're going to be starting called MTN3. What we're going to do is we're going to ask a music therapist three simple questions. It's going to be really great to hear these candid and inspirational nuggets of wisdoms from our peers. You can find MTN3 soon on iTunes and on the Music Therapy Roundtable blog.
Thank you for joining us. To see the show notes, go to www.musictherapyroundtable.com. If you like this podcast, take your skills to the next level by joining the Music Therapy Pro community. For only $17 per month, you will get unlimited access to CMTE's in-depth clinical skills podcasts and other invaluable resources designed to empower you to take charge of your personal and professional growth.